Come on, house. I thought you were cool. But it turns out you're just such a little beach house.
Oh.
And I'm Josh.
Hi, I'm Matt, and I'm trying to find a way to caterpillar to butterfly, like metamorphosis skills, use metamorphosis skills to change that dad joke into a different dad joke, and I might have done it.
A stepdad joke?
Oh, there we go.
That's delightful.
I took the elevator.
That is one of the more fun things about being an owner of a teenager is like when there's just a ridiculous pun on television, to watch them just melt into goo. It's just so funny.
Yeah, when you can actually hear their eyes roll.
Yeah. That's delightful. pardon me. This is Charlie down in Austin. I was trying to come up with something with a Z, and I was just like, this crazy trip that they take to Des Moines, and I was like, well, not going to work. And I was like, try to come up with somebody else. I'm like, yeah, just leave where it sits. That's okay.
Hmm.
It's a half-eaten sandwich.
What's the Z instead of the S let you know that it is like a hip hop urban kind of hip cool?
It is a Zandwich
version of Jerusalem. It's taking your Zamboni to Zanzibar.
Ooh, sounds.
When you watch the thing in Canada, it's Jerusalem. Which is weird. Anyway, what else is weird is that all of us, and this is Harsho Hot Dog.
It's very true.
So first up this week, we have a cool little short called La Noria, which is Spanish for the Noria. No, I have to do that every
time. It's still one of my favorite SNL jokes of all time.
Yesterday, I made myself laugh and nobody else in my family laugh because I was like, I hit my elbow. And then I went, it's Spanish for the bow. God, I'm just laughing at my own idiocy for a minute. Actually, in English, the Ferris wheel.
Lenoria. That makes perfect sense.
I looked that up in the attempt to make sure that I understood what was going on. So this is really neat, computer animated, somewhere in between Pixar and the Polar Express.
Kinda. I was struck by how pretty this is.
Really, really beautifully done. The creatures kind of look like Chris Riddell's artwork.
Chris Riddell, the name's familiar.
He's done a ton of children's book illustrations.
I will Google while you talk.
Like, I follow him on stuff. And Gris Grimby, too, who did The Dangerous Alphabet with Neil Gaiman. The big, like, creatures with big, long teeth. And just weird-looking stuff. So here's what I got out of this one. I definitely think it's open for interpretation. It seems like there's a kid whose dad has died, and all he has of his dad is like a music box and some pictures of him building the little toy Ferris wheel with his dad and the Ferris wheel itself. And these kind of weird looking monsters come in and start breaking the music box and stealing the photos and kind of taking everything away. And as he runs away from them into the attic, he finds out that they took all of the things to make a new, like, beautiful Ferris wheel with the music box in the middle of it. And so it kind of felt like the monsters were his grief and that they were stealing the happy memories. He felt like he was losing these happy memories of his dad to his grief. And then at the end found out that they were just being changed into something else, like broken but beautiful in the way that they were kind of put back together by the grief monsters.
That's the way I took it. It was the processing of grief and initially thinking that, like, everything is lost because that's the kind of short-sighted version of, you know, someone dying. And then, kind of like the difficult and rather adult realization of, like, well, no, I'll always have these parts, you know.
I kind of took it kind of similarly, but I kind of took it to he's working on the one in the room, and then things kind of go cattywampus. There's almost like a level of, he's a little guy, but it's sort of like there's a level of like expectation or obligation, as it were, and then kind of that gets overtaken by the kind of grief monsters, and then it sort of transforms into something that is a little bit more grand and a little bit bigger and a little newer and a little different. And it's sort of like, it's like, oh, I'm not doing this to only honor his memory. I'm doing this to kind of like move forward. And like, it's built off the memories that are positive and good. And it's sort of like, but it's like this evolution of a thing.
To yeah. Like, I felt like it nailed like a feeling of powerlessness at the beginning. That
very,
then turns,
oh yeah, very much
you know,
so. Yeah,
kind of turns into like the confidence of like, okay, like things are different, but I can move on. Like, yeah. There's enough. Like, I was really surprised by how much of a journey I thought happened in this, which is, I think, entirely without dialogue, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any dialogue at all.
No, at the mirror.
Right. You know, but it's like, yeah, there's no like narration. There's no like, it's all just like images and, you know, very, very, you know, carefully crafted, I think, to give you the impressions they want you to have. But yeah, I thought this one really, it's just gorgeous. I really like the monster designs. I thought they were cool. And yeah, I just thought it was like, wow, they did a lot with, you know, real small. I think I got the hiccups all of a sudden. The Pixar comparison is very apt for like the little shorts they have before their features, where it's just usually a, you know, pretty quiet little thing that just tells a sweet little story.
Well, and like from a technical standpoint, it's just, I mean, just if I want to focus on one particular thing, not even just the creature design and all the rest of the stuff and the how cinematic it is, but just the lighting alone.
Oh God.
It's just like, you know, because when I watch a lot of animation anymore, you know, it's kind of like you get, you know, I mean, nitpicky, but it's like you get into kind of like, okay, well, what am I looking for in terms of what we're doing with the thing? And like, and I always seem to fixate on lighting because it's just sort of like, I know that's hard and hard to do consistently, you know, because it's just such a small little detail. And it's like, but God,
golly. The bit where they have the string of like Christmas lights, you know, and the kind of illuminating dark hall and like a couple get stepped on, like all those things are just like, yeah, I think the contrasts there are really great.
Well, and then also too, the little boy, the design of the little boy, and then the pictures with him and his father, of course, but then the design of the little boy, like I'm all for creative ideas and like, you know, doing some stylistic things and, you know, and I'm certainly down with all that stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of great animation that has all kinds of crazy human and other kinds of designs and stuff like that. But in a way, I'm glad that he didn't look like a hyper stylized person design, you know, cause like, sure. You know, like watching Claws, that animated one on Netflix last year, like how much I fucking love that. Well, that's so good. But they're all very, very stylized. But it's like it works with the art design and the scenery and everything. It all works good. But I think in something like this, if he was this like hyper stylized looking kind of humanish thing, I don't know if it works as good as him just basically looking like a person. And I thought that was from a creative standpoint, given all the other visuals and stuff, I thought that was a very smart creative decision. And and plus this one made me just a little bit misty eyed. It was like, it was just got a real sincere heart in there. And also, goddamn, I don't know if you guys had this feeling when it gets to the end with the credits, but like, did you not just get to the end of it and just go, this must have taken these fucking people a year and a half to make this?
Yeah.
Like, it just, I got,
it's like, yeah, it's remarkable that somebody without like a major studio backing can make something that looks like this now.
It's like, holy cow, like, this just, I don't know, I was just, this is your slow golf clap kind of situation. Like, it's like, man, I don't know, that was really nifty. You know, it almost kind of, in a way, and I don't want to downplay their own creativity and their own ideas, but it almost makes it feel as though, like, it came from the house of Del Toro, in a way. Like, it just sort of, this feels like it's that kind of thing where it's, like, very fantastical and very, you know, those creature designs and that chase sequence, and like,
there's a dark fairy tale with a lot of heart kind of sensibility that I think runs through them both. Yeah.
And I really liked that the monsters didn't change their appearance when it became clear that they were doing something good.
Yeah.
Like, they're still weird and twisted and broken looking and frightening, but now he knows that they may look frightening, but they're benevolent.
Yeah, if they turn into like squirrels or something, you'd be like, oh.
Maybe. I always like it when things turn into squirrels.
But then I would want them to just be squirrels. You know, I mean, I'm not like Joseph Scrimshaw level obsessed with squirrels, but I think they're cool.
Bee squirrels. Terrifying.
I know. I want only your A squirrels.
I was just thinking of the weirdest honey. Tastes a little like an acorn.
It's weird. Kind of nutty. Yeah, a little nutty. Yeah.
A little nutty.
What's that, nut and honey?
Oh, for God's sakes. We're not going to do any better than that. I mean, that's Josh's sort of...
TM.
Josh's sort of, yeah, that's...
That is the sad part, is we are likely not going to do any better than that.
Well, it's good to know we've peaked early. Let's knock off and go to bed.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a Korean movie called...
Oh, I'm assuming we're all thumbs up on that one, yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, sure. I got to confirm for posterity.
Please watch the thing and enjoy it.
Yeah, you're a posterity.
Yeah. No more posterior.
Your Highness, it'll be Your Highness if you keep calling me that.
Answer the second question first.
So, Metamorphosis. Why not? So, Korean movie with like a ghost demony thing happening. I thought this was interesting and unique for us because it exists in like the Roman Catholic mythos.
Yeah, so
it's not like the Wailing or any, you know, the couple of feudal ones that we saw that where ghosts and demons and things are all kind of the same creature. Like, this is straight up Catholic devil and hell.
Yeah, this movie had
me their own
at
take on it.
Culture that is not traditionally strongly rooted in Catholic doctrine tackling a very Roman Catholic exorcism plot. And just seeing the difference in how they interpret some of those things, like having grown up around it, and like then seeing like, oh, this is like the way that filters through this cultural lens. I was just like, fuck, this is fascinating. Like, this is the movie I talked to people about this week when I would be like at work and stuff. Like a, you know, Korean version of an exorcist movie with like pretty traditional Roman Catholic trappings, just a little askew. And not in the like, we're tweaking it kind of way, like, haha, but just like, this is, I think, all straightforward as far as I can tell. It just comes off as a little different, you know. They're playing a B flat to the B I'm used to.
Well, they start though with the really to be expected, like, girl tied to the bed and the exorcist being performed, and then we get like the demon kills the girl that he's been possessing, and okay. Then yeah, so that is all that first opening 15 minutes or so feels very much like a Western exorcism thing. But then what we're in for is something much stranger, because the demon comes back, but just in the form of any person that it wants to look like. So you just go, dad is acting real weird, and then dad comes in the room and like, huh, well. And throughout, it just keeps playing with that identity of which one is Satan at any time. And got me a couple of times, which is very cool, because I'm usually a couple of steps ahead of stuff, just having seen hundreds of horror
movies. 8 billion
movies,
yeah.
Right? But there were times when it was like, oh, shit, that was, oh, shit.
And
right?
I also really loved that, yeah, you have kind of your traditional exorcism beginning to sort of set, like, this movie starts where The Exorcist ends.
Yeah, and basically.
I think that's a smart move, right? It's like, yep, we get it. Let's get that out of the way and tell our own story. And I was like, oh, bold move, movie. I appreciate this. Because for a second there, I was kind of going, womp, womp. And then, nope, okay. Now you've got me convinced that you're going to try to, like, clear the slate and start your own story. And they do not waste time getting fucking weird. Like, you know, family moves to a house. They're talking a little bit about, you know, estranged, is it brother-in-law? Brother? One of the two, I guess.
It's the dad's brother.
Definitely. Okay, and they kind of like talk about that, like, you know, that those events have kind of influenced their decision to move, and then first night, like, neighbors acting funky, and then, like, you know, day two, guy has like Lovecraftian levels of gore and ritual sacrifice shit all over his fucking house. So I'm like, all right, movie, you've got my attention, and then it held it, like, because you go from that. And thinking, ah, gotcha, so the neighbor's the devil now. To, like, dad being a creeper on his daughter, or, you know, mom being a jerk at the breakfast table or whatever. And I'm like, oh, fuck, now I have no idea what's happening. And that, but not in, like, a this movie makes no sense way. Just in, like, the danger is everywhere kind of way.
Oh, I
and that
said
was
out loud,
really refreshing.
I said out loud, there's about a third of the way through the movie and about two-thirds of the way through the movie, I said out loud, I don't know how this is going to end.
Yep.
Like, mm-hmm. Usually with an exorcism movie, you kind of, you know, you kind of get the beats and you kind of get the it's a feel of if they're going to be real nasty or if it's going to be.
They're pretty paint by numbers at this point.
Yeah. I mean, you can kind of pick the beats out, and sometimes they're, you know, some are better than others, certainly, and whatever. But it's like you can kind of see it coming. But in this one, I was like, yeah, multiple times. I'm like, you got me. Two things I was going to point out from the jump, the opening sequence. You know, it's like, okay, this is pretty heavy. I can see where we're going. But then at the like monastery or wherever the hell, where our main priest guy, dad's brother,
where is like, growing, you know,
tending to the garden or whatever else, he looks up as the other older priest fellow is coming towards him, and made a note. I was like, a Korean Jeremy Piven likes to garden, because it was like from certain angles, man. I was like, because the condom was in the room for part of this.
That's really
like,
funny.
I said that, and he's like, wait, what? And I looked up pulled a picture of Jeremy Piven on my phone and showed it to him. He's like, oh, so I made that note. So then, but the other thing too that I two other little technical things. One is, and you mentioned the neighbor's house, which was like, you know, that just as a set alone, I was like, good lord. Like, yeah. You know, talking about attention to detail, like, shima needs.
A nightmare to clean up.
Okay. Well, that was the thing, like, in his apartment, in the priest's apartment, and that thing, I'm 100% convinced that they had to have shot those things later.
Reverse order. Yeah.
They had to have, because, like, there's no, like, in the priest's apartment, like, they dump, like, oh god, I don't know, 200 gallons of blood. I mean, it's like, I don't know how the fuck, there's no way you're gonna clean that shit up. And the same thing with the other set with the neighbor is like, how on earth do you unfuck that place? Like, there's no way. So it's just like they had to have done that way, because this is so extensive. But one thing I noticed, and this is a weird observation, and maybe I'm just crazy, but like, I noticed that when, you know, he calls the cops show up, and they go over there and talk to the neighbor guy, and it's like just pouring rain. I noticed that the rain was weird, and like, not in a weird like, oh, it's something supernatural, but it's more like, it's like a Korean movie kind of thing, where like, watch enough Korean, especially like some of the police thrillers and kind of police ones and procedurals that I really kind of like, where it's like Memories of Murder, where it's like just always pouring rain, where it's one of two things I think I've come to. One is it just dumps rain in Korea all the time, and so that's what it has to look like.
Or two, like 80s New York.
yeah, exactly. Or two, that in Korea they have a couple of movie house prop effects places, and they're like, you want rain? We get rain for you. And then it's like, but it's just gonna look this way, because it's just that's the two companies in Korea that can do it, and then that's the machine that they have. Because like, it's just, I was thinking about it all afternoon. I was like, almost every Korean movie that I've watched that has just lots of rain, like, it always looks this way. And then I watch movies that are set in America, and the rain doesn't look like that. Like, it just is very different. And it's like, it's a weird thing to notice, but it was like Korean rain is like heavier, I guess.
Is jarring when you see a movie where you are seeing the rain machine effect as opposed to rain.
Yeah.
You know, because like, there's definitely like, and it's gotten obviously better and better, but like, every now and then you watch a movie and you can see sort of the, like, it must be the older machines where maybe they chug a little bit, you know, like the generator's not great. And so you'll see that, like, it's almost like waves on a beach in the way the rain hits the ground. If they do like an overhead shot where it's like, whoosh, and it kind of moves forward, like the heaviness of it moves forward a couple feet and then kind of pulls back and then moves forward. And it's just like, it's not quite smoothly sucking water through the pipe.
Yeah. It's
and
just like,
that just makes me go, oh yeah, yeah. And I think that was like a trope of like, when you'd watch, you know, like stuff in like the 80s, especially TV stuff would be the worst. And it very much just looked like a hose that had been just shot straight up in the air and came right back down. You know, like, you just put your thumb over the end and like, it looks about like that. And yeah, there's definitely like a, oh no, I know this rain. This is the, you know, Rain-O-Matic 3000 version.
Yeah.
You know, this, like, one always comes down at about a 45 degree angle. You know, for Braveheart, they did the Scottish Rain-O-Matic 4000.
Like, well, it's just like, it was just such a strange thing to notice, but I just was like, I was so taken by that. I was like, not in a bad way. It was just kind of like, huh. Like, all Korean movies seem to have the same rain. Like, it's just, it's like, I don't know. This is a wild thing. But then the other thing that I noticed,
it'll be an Instagram filter in another year. So
yeah, it'll be his Korean rain. Like, oh, fair enough. Be very careful with that one. But then the other thing too, and Josh, you touched on it. You're saying it kind of got you a couple times. I gotta say, like, yeah, I wouldn't. It wasn't like, you know, like leaving all the lights on. You know, like jumping at every noise, kind of whatever. But it was like, not only did this get me a couple times, but like, the way this was shot and assembled and the way it was edited and the way that they shot in and around that house and all the rest of those things, like, I don't know anything about the guy who shot the thing or the, I don't really know much of anything about the director at all, but, like, man, did this have a look. Like, and especially given, like, some of the freakier moments and stuff, they didn't give in to any of the things that we come to expect from a lot of, you know, especially Japanese, you know, ghost movies, and then some of the Korean horror ones where you get that kind of, like, hard cut stuff and that kind of slam kind of whatever. They just didn't do any of that stuff. It was like you had to sit in the environment, and, like, the camera would just turn and then turn back and then raise up and then go back over this way. And it's just like, I don't know, man, like, either it just takes tremendous balls or just ridiculous amount of skill, but it's just like, I was really taken by that and just noticed how much of an edge it put on me.
Yeah, just like, I would, ugh. I'd say, like, it seems like there's a really steady hand at the tiller because, yeah, I think, you put into words a thing I couldn't quite grok, but, like, it is, this movie isn't shot like a horror movie. It is... The fact that when you're watching a scene right before something horrible happens, this is like, you know, Tuesdays with Maury. Like, it's just a bunch of people in their living room or a family sitting down to breakfast like you would at the start of a sitcom.
Yeah.
And then it's only when someone starts acting out of sorts that you realize, like, oh, this idyllic scene has already been infiltrated by whatever the evil is. But there's never, like, there's no heightening music to, like, go, oh, they're about to go to breakfast, but something's afoot.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's just they're sitting there, and some kid just kind of goes, ugh, my food tastes weird. And just, and then boom, like, they're off to the races with mom being completely nuts, you know? And I think because of that really, you know, I don't mean pedestrian in, like, a bad way, but I think calm approach maybe is a fairer word. I just want it to seem like I'm casting aspersions on the choice. I think it's a great choice, but, like, maybe because of that, they are able to do the same gag of surprising you with who's possessed seconds after having the previous possessed person leave the screen, and right. It still gets you every time.
Yeah,
how does that keep working? Like, you should, like, your horror clit should be very numb after, like, the third one, but I kept going, oh fuck, now it's them. And then, you know, when you see, like, the bad version of, like, dad leave and then good version runs in, the characters are, like, afraid that it's not the right one, but we kind of go, no, that's the right one. And then almost immediately go, wait, but now is one of the daughters the wrong one? Because when they ran away from bad dad, they both actually left the screen for a second. Now that means either one of them. And sometimes it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, fuck, how do you turn this around on me so quickly? You know, it's really surprising.
They give you the double whammy, too, with father convinced that daughter is the bad one.
Oh god.
And then later she comes downstairs and he's like, oh my god, how could I do this to you? How did I not know my own daughter? And that time she's the bad one.
So fucking good. Cute, dude.
Asshole.
Yeah, that was another moment where the movie pulled up from doing any kind of cliche.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
There is and then just as simple as, like, for some reason the priest wants me to go pick him up at the airport, so I guess I'm going.
Yeah.
And we think absolutely nothing good of that. What, you think I couldn't find an address? And it's like, no. I think I literally said out loud, no.
Well, that was another one that I wanted to mention was that, like, you know, my gold standard for Korean movies is always Confession of Murder and Memories of Murder. Like, those two are just fucking incredible. God damn, they're both just so incredibly good. But, like, in terms of, like, car chase or, like, car sort of stunts or whatever else, in this movie, they just fucking launch a van off of a cliff.
And, oh my, like, god, is that a great looking crash?
And it's in camera, and it is just like, yeah, you know, there certainly weren't any humans in there, of course, you know, naturally, but it's like, I mean, that was just bracing and, like, holy god, like, you just felt it.
But that does that same thing of, by filming it so straightforward, it looks so brutal. As opposed to, like, the multiple cuts and showing it rolling and flipping and exploding. And not that those aren't fun in action movies, but this just looks like, oh shit, someone just drove off the road. Like, if you saw that in real life, that's what it would look like and you'd freak out. You know?
Yeah, no, it just, that took your breath away. It was just like, holy mackerel. And then also, too, there's a pull away for us as the audience. You know, it's just like, wait, which one's the... who's the bad shit? Which one's which? Like, crap. Like, oh, I'm trying to kind of keep track. But also, they do it to them, where, like, you know, once, you know, dad catches on a little bit and the daughters catch on a little bit. And then, like, when somebody's coming up the stairs, but also went in the door, and they're like, look at it. And it's like, it's one of those do my eyes deceive me kind of situations where you just go, like, what did I just see?
Yeah.
Like, I just saw him go, but is it still him? Like, clearly he didn't go to the door and then come up the stairs at the same time. Like, that can't be right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, and so they do that a couple times to the actual people in the movie. And it's like, and I thought that was really smart, too, because then you're just like, you're hoping, okay, you guys are going to figure it out. And like, no, you don't have it down yet. Crud.
Well, the scene with, like, I think it's right after one of the evil dad scenes where, you know, the daughters are flipping out and then good dad arrives and is confused. And then mom shows up and you're like, okay, all the commotion is drawing the whole family. And then mom starts swinging a hammer and, like, just smacking dad's arm.
Oh.
And you're like, okay, now I believe he's good dad. And now, like, look at how hard he's willing to, you know, go to protect his daughter. And then you're like, all the sympathy in the world goes to this guy, because for once you're like, I can latch on to this as a good person. And then as soon as they cut away from you, don't know again. And it's like, fuck, like, damn it. You really made me care, but he also told me that I can't trust shit.
It's just
so the only thing that that dropped this down just a little bit for me is that I wish that they could have come up with another ending, because they had diverged so much from the exorcism tropes. And then at the end, it was just like, but I'm going to have the demon enter my body so I can trap it there and then kill myself and it'll be fine. And like, yeah, that is like the time-tested way to end the story. But there had been so much innovation in here that I was hoping for something different. I guess it is a little different that in The Exorcist, the priest is demanding that the demon enter him, like asking the demon to come in. And in this, the guy is asking God to put the demon in him, which is, like, that's kind of interesting, but it's still, like, the upshot is the same.
Yeah. You know, it's his full circle of, you know, his manifestation of his guilt over the previous one or whatever, but, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you end it differently. Like, I'm not that good of a writer.
Well, and then also, this one
would be
does,
neat.
Yeah, this one does that thing where we, as Western audiences, get used to the idea that there's going to be a bunch of peril. But the only people who are going to die are a neighborhood security guard, right, a delivery person, or a friend of family. And in this one, like, you know, just straight up kills one of the daughters. And in a moment that I feel very ashamed, but I also feel like I should probably say, which was when she goes down to the basement, which, by the way, that was a great setup, too, because that whole thing of, like, you know, he does that little holy water trick when he says to the one girl, she's like, oh, I, you know, get the crosses and the Virgin Mary and whatever. And she's like, you know, now? And he's like, no, it can wait. You know, whatever else. I was like, wait, why would you put the waiting? That doesn't make any sense. Like, oh, and then you figure out, like, oh, it's the holy water thing. But when she goes down to the basement and then just gets kind of tricked, fooled, and then the whole thing, and then open goes the furnace, and then in she goes, banging her head in a kind of way.
So sickening.
And then door closes, fire turns on. My brain had a terrible thought, which was, without even thinking, my brain just went, oh, Korean barbecue. And I turned to Conlon and I said, my brain just thought a terrible, terrible joke. And I feel like such a shit for it. And Conlon goes, Korean barbecue? And I was like, yep. And I was like, fuck, man. Like, this is terrible. I have to tell Josh and Matt about it, but it's
that
terrible.
That is fantastic.
But I felt so bad.
You really have no soul to make jokes in Korean like that.
Wow.
Seul. Seul.
That is really funny. Thank you for reminding me of that scene, because I'd kind of forgotten. But yeah, that is out of, to me, that was totally out of the blue. The idea that we're just going to lose one of these family members, and in a really surprising and brutal way. It's just like, yep, they just have to kind of soldier on without one of their daughters now. Like,
yeah, it's just,
it's a very tempered, happy ending.
There's no respite for that whole thing. It's just like, you just, you know, he's lost his brother and one of his daughters, and it's like, it's just this, like, that is the price, as it were. Like, it's
I had just enough time to think, oh, she'll be trapped in that. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's just like, holy cow. Also, too, another thing I want to point out just real quickly was, you know, we have dad who has a suit job, but, like, you know, outside of rushing to the hospital, you know, or leaving for work and then rushing to the hospital, there's not a whole lot of interplay that comes into as far as like what he does for work or why or where or whatever. Excuse me. And I thought that was great because that seems to be a big underpinning in a lot of Korean movies, especially a lot of Korean horror movies, is there's always some drama about work or finances or where the job is or whatever the fuck. And it's like the fact that it just, it's the story isn't about that. Like it just, it doesn't, it's not even a part of the plot really. Is pretty darn refreshing. I found. I was like,
really,
I
once the movie gets going, it never needs to leave the house, and it almost never does. Yeah,
yeah. That was,
you
that
almost
was,
don't need neighbor at all.
Yeah, I think it's cool, but it is perhaps the least important manifestation of the evil, right?
Yeah, I think all it does is kind of throw Dad off kilter for a little bit. And maybe convince us that the threat is going to be coming from outside, which is you know, like a good red herring. I guess that's all right.
Yeah. I like a pickled red herring.
Hmm. Delicious. Let me look up my...
I actually do want pickled herring now. Damn it.
Well, yeah. See if I have anything else to say about this one. Overall, this is just such an interesting take on a classic American genre. And it is... It is just fresh enough to feel exciting without going too wild. And it is the rare Korean movie that doesn't feel like it could lose 15 minutes. So,
does this one, it clocks in like what, just under 2 hours?
It's like 152 with credits.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, that's normally I'd be complaining about that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So overall, I would say this is definitely worth a watch. It's beautiful to look at. Yeah. It gets a lot of mileage out of just a handful of gags, but always keeping the ball under the cup that you're not expecting it to be in. So I would call this like an 8.5 out of 10 and a strong recommend for those who are not subtitle-averse.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is a movie that, I mean, as we've all kind of gushed over now, and I think it just, yeah, it tells... a familiar trope in a unique way and truly was surprising me kind of throughout. And I think honestly is a good clinic for the fact that while there is money spent here and there's a couple lavish things, most of this is just a bunch of actors in a room because there's not a lot of like monstery demon stuff. You know, it's just the people being evil now. And, you know, you can do a lot with a little if it's just really cleverly done. And this movie really nails that, I think. Yeah, I think this will shoot to the top of my recommend list for a little while here when people are like, what should I see if you've seen all these horror movies? Because, yeah, odds are they haven't seen it yet. And again, yeah, the aversion to subtitles is an issue for some people. But, yeah, I just really liked this. So... yeah, I'll go even a little higher. I'm going to say 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10 interesting arguments among priests.
Yeah,
because there's that one moment where it's like, "So are you saying all my experience is crap or whatever?" And I was like,
"Yeah, what
nice.
Was up with the one Philippine priest? He was just like, just not having it. Like, yeah, what is with that guy?
I loved they had this like really bizarre little council of people that we just get like a taste of, and it was." Probably a little extraneous. I think it only exists so that you can have a reason for the brother to have to leave to go pick someone up as a ruse. But I actually really enjoyed that. And like when they show the bit of the mass, which is like done in English, like that to me was just because it's so culturally incongruous in my brain. It was fascinating, and I really thought that was cool.
Yeah, that was a. I always get caught off guard a little bit in those type of scenes where it's sort of like, oh, but I don't speak English. Like, oh, son of a gun. I was taken with how great this looked and just how assured it was and just how tense. You know, like the scene. Okay, like perfect example the scene where I refer to him as Good Sister and Annoying Sister, but like when Good Sisters are taking a shower. And then, like, she, like, you know, it's like, you know, with her hair. Like, oh, this is going to be a thing where someone fucks with her hair. Like, no. Okay. And then there's going to be, she's going to turn into a thing. Like, no, not a thing. And then she, like, you know, wipes off the fog, and then it's like, other sister's there, but she's physically there. And it's just like, and then that whole little, like, you got to kill us, you got to kill us all. It was just a burden, blah, 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 blah. And all it's like, and then she's poof, hits the thing, backs up, and I just, and Condon was looking at his phone because he couldn't, it was like, it was too much for him, you know. And he's just, so he's not looking at the thing, and I said, she can't smile, don't smile. But then instead of a smile, she did like a little Mona Lisa thing. And I was like, oh, was, just chills right up the spine. So yeah, it was just a really well put together thing that was tense and gorgeous to look at. And just, yeah, I was really impressed by it. So, I think I would go with 9. I think the 9 makes sense. 9, Dave's house of late night, quick use interior decorating. That scene when he goes in there and everything is just normal and it's just like piles of cloth and then the cloth machine and stuff like that.
So
it's
infuriating.
Like, what the blood and then the goat and all the shit. Like, what did, and he says, oh, he must have cleaned it up. it's like, oh, for crying out loud. You know, in a slapsticky movie, then the demon's all like smug, and then looks up and sees like one bloody cross like hanging, and it's like up in the rafters. Like, just keep looking down. Yeah, look at the floors. Look at the parquet floor. Aren't they nice? Like, it's just sort of like that's that movie, but not this one.
It's the Aurora Borealis. The Aurora Borealis.
Yeah, good.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the thing? It's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to go straight into Jerusalem?
That's fine.
Okay.
Sure.
Hopping into Jerusalem. By the way, there is a lovely song by Dan Byrne called Jerusalem.
Yes.
That once you have heard that song, you will not be able to watch this movie without constantly singing it in your own head. So, Matt, if you haven't heard that, it is delightful.
And I don't know if I have.
Yeah. It's the one that starts, if I tell you that I love you, don't test my love, accept my love, don't test my love, because maybe I don't love you all that much.
Yeah.
And just gets better from there. But that has nothing to do with Jerusalem, which is about a couple of women from America who are Jewish and are going on a vacation in Tel Aviv and then also to Jerusalem. They hook up with a guy that they insist on referring to as an American, even though he talks like he was born in South Africa and raised in Australia by people from Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a continental accent.
Yeah. He's from everywhere.
Yep.
So, and we find out that the end of the world is coming, but instead of like demons running loose on the streets, the demons are raising the dead and they're zombies, except they have wings, and they're growing into something else, and there are some giant things stomping around, too.
Yeah, that's good times.
You also, late in the game, we learn that the demon zombie thing is kind of infectious. But we end up with something that's kind of a zombie run and gun with a little gloss of religious significance painted on it. And it's also entirely shot from a first-person perspective. From the perspective of the smart glasses that the girl is wearing. So I guess the reason why I ended up liking this so much is that it has a lot of asks of me and a lot of things that could have gone very wrong. You have the whole found footage thing, the whole like Rory zombie thing, the completely unlikable protagonist and who is surrounded by much more interesting people. But on the whole, this just had so much neat shit going on that I ended up just going with it. I don't know. Matt, you said that, and I think both you and Charlie weren't as impressed with this as I was.
It's a film that I think sounds better on paper than I think it was in the execution. Because like I was saying before we started recording, like, I hated our protagonist so much. Like, as soon as shit goes down and they're like, all right, we got to get to whatever gate to get out of the city before they lock it. And like, they're not even sure what's going on yet, right? And they have like the couple of Israeli guys they met at the bar, and they've got
the cool guy that makes lemonade. Because whenever they're like, fuck off, he's like, I'll go squeeze lemons. Which I thought was really cute. And they run past the mental hospital for people that have like Jerusalem syndrome. And she's like, we got to get so-and-so. And everybody's like, we're all going to be trapped here and maybe die if we don't just go now. And she does the whole whine and plead and beg. And you're like, you know, this is going to cost someone their life. Like, yeah, this is annoying. It's a tropey movie thing. Whatever. And then they go into the hospital. And sure enough, there's monsters all over the place. And then it's like, I felt like from then on, she kept always making the shitty choice in any survival situation. Where, you know, it's, oh, my friend's bitten, but leave her alone. Oh, I'm bitten, but ignore me until I vamp out. You know, like, I hated her personally so much. But I do love the idea of, like, oh, shit, like, crazy end times coming down on, you know, Jerusalem. And, like, you know, the little bit, you know, the very Cloverfield-y moment of running along and looking up and seeing, you know, a 12-story tall golem. You know, mm-hmm. just like marching its ass through the sea. I'm like, that's fucking rad. You know, and like.
And don't forget King David.
King David is fantastic. Oh, very dope. It's characters like that are great. And then, you know, like they just, the demons just kind of sprouting wings. And like you said, it's kind of the whole roaring monster thing, except like, yeah, I don't find that annoying. Like I was fine with the monstery stuff. I just was like, I want to be following any other character than this one. This is the mm-hmm. character I want to say the stupid thing and then be like, by a monster. And I can be like, yay, like the dumb one died. Now let's follow the cool kids. And unfortunately, we're given the dumb one as our protagonist, which didn't really matter up until things went sideways. That, you know, because she was just sort of a empty vessel throughout the beginning of the movie. So, yeah, that was kind of my beef. And I just honestly was so frustrated with that that. I was just irked and kind of like waiting for this to be over because I just didn't want to hear her speak ever again.
Where'd you land on some of this, Charles?
I mean, I always feel like a broken record with the stuff where, like, you know, story wise and otherwise, like, you know, I certainly thought it was fine. There wasn't anything, you know, like just didn't send me to the moon or just make me, you know, angry or anything like that. So it's, you know, kind of in the middle as far as that goes. You know, but I always feel like a broken record and say, like, if this was not first person, would it have worked a little bit better? But I always seem to have that thought. Like, it just, you know, that's the sort of whatever, but it's like, you know, I thought the use of the Google Glass was like an interesting idea, but at the same time, I think at times it was a little bit like when it gets a little bit jacked up, and then it's like it starts like spazzing out and showing cat videos and stuff, and it's just sort of like, I don't really understand. Like, why, really?
Yeah, you know? I think that would have been better served with just, oh, we've given our protagonist a reason to never not have a camera because it's her prescription glasses. Now just leave it alone and don't address it ever again. Like, I think just making it that, where, like, at most you see her in the morning, like, moving the thing and then settling them on her face and then, you know, starting to go back to the thing. Like, but I just feel like, they kept drawing your attention to the fact she's wearing these fucking glasses. Like, we know. That's what we're watching. Just have her wearing glasses. Like when I wear glasses, I don't dick with them all day. I just put them on in the morning and take them off at night, you know?
Well, didn't the payoff with the face recognition thing, didn't that come later on when like one of the demony spirity
things? Oh, that it's like her brother.
Like, it's like her brother, right? Yeah. Okay. So I thought that was what it was, but I wasn't sure.
More than that though, I liked the, cause it would frequently just identify faces.
Yeah,
like our cameras do.
That was really cool. There were
a couple of times where that worked real well.
Yeah,
actually, I was expecting to be more annoyed than I was the last time the glasses get hit, and there's just like a giant couple of cracks across them for the last 10 minutes of the movie. But it kind of worked, and it kind of sold the special effects even more.
By the time you get to that badass ending.
You know.
I think you're right. I think that was a smart decision on their part. Because, I mean, it seemed like, was it the one listing that I read? So that they raised, the budget was like 160 grand, and they raised it kind of grassroots sort of style. So, in a way, like, you work with what you can work with. And so that does seem to kind of lead credence to that, to where you're not shooting above your you know, above your weight class as far as that goes, and that's so I think that's really smart, you know, for sure.
I would say if the budget's only that much, this movie looks great for being that low of a budget.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay, that's, you know, so really hats off to them for that. I'm not sure about some of the plot devices that comes, like, you know, it may be a footy duddy or it just being a little bit thin, but some of the plot devices to get them where they need to go just, like, did strike me as a little bit strange at times where I just kind of was like, eh. You know, like, you go into a foreign country and you're doing other kinds of stuff, and it's like, oh, well, let's go to this other place. And, like, really? Is that really what you're going to do? Like, okay. it seems like I'm not going to, like, roll my eyes, comic book guy, like, ooh, that's convenient. But it's sort of like, there was a couple moments where they just sort of, like, you know, did a couple things along those lines, which just were a little bit like, kind of like, okay, all right, let's get on to the next thing. But, I mean, in terms of, like, the idea and somehow some of those sequences played out, like, it was pretty tense, you know? Like, it was pretty uneasy at moments. There were times that I had to look away, not because I was too scared, but because I was like, oh, I'm going to barf. But that's just, like, I just have difficulty with, I really have difficulty with found footage stuff sometimes. Like, that's why I love Afflicted so damn much, because, like, I thought they did a good job of, like, not overdoing that. Like, in the last third of this one, there's definitely a couple sequences I was like, oh, I gotta look away. It's just like, it's too much with the running and the sweeping and the like when blonde girl kind of starts to succumb to the thing and that whole bit, and then I get the guns drawn on her, and then there's like some chaos and all this whatever. I was like, I had to look away because like it's too much.
Yeah,
the only one that good. Because I can get motion sick too, but the only one that got me, God, what was the one that has the people in the insane asylum? They're trying to shoot.
Yeah, that was another one.
Hunter show, like, yeah, that one definitely made me feel ill in a way that this one didn't. Weirdly, I think like there's not a lot of the whipping around the camera, but there definitely is in that scene for sure.
Yeah, then that one, also that one is like limited sight because you get light from far away down the hallway and stuff, and they keep turning and looking back. Like, reminded me a little bit of like the first Resident Evil in a way, where it's sort of like, not the movie, the game, where it's sort of like there are times when like the camera makes you go, I gotta look to the right, and I gotta look forward, and
I'm very glad I don't get motion sick from watching first person shit, because that sounds like a drag.
Like, it doesn't like a ton, but I just, you know, when it does, it's just like, bleh.
I don't think I've ever gotten it from a movie or anything. I'm starting to, when I go on like actual rides, I'm finding out my stomach is not what it used to be. So that's just me going like, oh, okay, I'm old.
when we were in Orlando, when we went to Universal, I was really looking forward to the Simpsons ride, but I did have to close my eyes for like half of it because it was just sort of like, ooh. Like, you know, the screen's whipping around and doing all this kind of crazy stuff, and it's like, I gotta not be looking at this for a minute because it's a little much. I don't know. It's annoying. It's not the movie's fault.
You know. How did you feel about it suddenly being a contagion type zombie thing? Is that like, that hit me both ways? I think it was really surprising. Like, oh, and she has an infection, you know, she has a bite or whatever, and she's gonna turn. It's like, shit, I didn't think we were at the point of like people turning. I thought it was just if you're dead, then you can get demoned up. But then we just kind of went with that for the third act of the movie.
I don't know that I was following like this tightly woven plot so hard that seemed like a curveball to me.
You're right. It is pretty kinetic and just kind of,
you know, I just was like, oh shit, now this and this, and there's this giant monster that we don't even really address. And
yeah,
you know, which to be fair, like by. Good. Like that just means like this world is bigger than just the microcosm we're seeing. And that's a nice way to world build. Right. So, yeah, it's just, okay, there's all this shit going on, and it's like, oh, fuck, demons are just, like, bursting out of things, and it's like, oh, it turns out, like, if they bite you, the demons can possess you now, and it's like, all right, like, whatever, that's your rules in this universe, and I just kind of was like, okay, you know, that didn't bother me. Like I said, I only got bothered when our protagonist was like, we gotta get her to a hospital. I'm like, because, you know, the penicillin, Remember how, like, every time the church does an exorcism, they're just like, take two Xanax. Like, what is your antibiotic, your anti-diabolic?
Like, I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, it feels, actually, it's interesting you brought up the potential, because, like, I mean, it feels a little undercooked, but also there's not a lot of, from, you know, 20 minutes in, there's not a lot of stopping, sitting around and navel contemplating, you know, so, like, it's not a lot of time to just sit around and be, like, insufferable and or just slow. So, you know, because of the pace of it, there's not enough time to stop and kind of, like, you know, not nitpick, but, like, just to think about that part of it. Because you're right that it is sort of unexpected in that sense. Like, you don't really, you know, that doesn't really happen very often where you have this kind of like secondary kind of demon sort of infection sort of thing, but at the same time, like, it could be one of those things where it's like, if you're talking about like end times kind of like, you know, disease or whatever the fuck, like, this is sort of, you know, it all kind of vibes in there. And I guess if they had like come across like scholarly fellow this guy, and then he's like, well, this is the thing, and then the infection of the blood, and this, here's a passage of this thing, and take this pamphlet, and like, it's like, eh, that wouldn't, you know, just, I don't think it's got time for it. I don't, you know, it doesn't really suffer for it, I don't think. Although, it, yeah, because it does feel like, you know, I put it this way, I think if you're making that movie, then for one thing, I don't know if it works first person in any capacity, but then for two, it's really got to be, like, I almost kind of think it has to be a different movie at that point, you know, because if you're really going to dive deep into that kind of thing, because then you get into that kind of World War Z or Contagion or something where you just, it's a really widespread sort of a thing, and there's that threat, and that's your threat, really. And so then the winged things and all the rest of it doesn't really jive. So, I mean, it's fine. You know, it's sort of like, I can't really fault them for it, because it's, like I said, they weren't sitting around too idly to waste a whole lot of time. Mm-hmm. Although the king, was it King George, King Herod,
King David.
There we go. Yeah, like that was like maybe one of the components. Like initially, it was like slightly charming, and then I was like, okay, kind of growing tired of this. I was like, this is sort of. But at the same time, but also had that same feeling with the two Israeli guard guys too, where I was like, I guess kind of like, for one thing, their dialogue was pretty clunky, and then for two, it was like, this just feels like all these sequences are just taking way too damn long. And it's just like, all right, come on, let's get back to it. Like, both those guys seem a little bit like wet towels, a little bit of that. But,
I think you're right. The one place that this movie dragged for me was in the asylum. So it's like, oh my God, we know what's going to happen here. She's going to end up bringing him out. They're going to lose one of their people. And it's just kind of, let's get to it. You know, let's not have any more hiding behind a desk. But at the same time, I really liked King David's, like, the reveal that he was the kid in the footage from the beginning.
Oh, that was cool.
That was neat.
Yeah. I didn't catch that initially, and I had to kind of rewind back. Oh, okay. Make sure I caught that correctly.
It was the... sorry, I'm dying. have either of you guys watched The Tick on Amazon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The tinfoil hat guy, Kevin or whatever, when you find out that he's, like, not crazy. It was that moment. I was like, oh, shit, they have their own tinfoil hat guy from The Tick.
Well, that was from the old comics, though, wasn't it? That was the thing that was, like the kind of the ranting, raving lunatic was actually the one that got everything right.
Maybe. I don't know. I've only read the first two omnibuses, so I don't know.
And it's been a while. Of, like, I mean, I haven't read The Tick in 20 years, at least. You know, it's been a while, but... that seems to stick out my memory for that. The only time I had a little bit of a Josh fuck you movie type situation was when she finds him in the cell and she looks and it's like, oh, it's a lock. And he's like, here, go to the keys to the desk. And it's like, she goes into a room that is completely ramshackly crazy and like no light and all this stuff. And it's all, cause there's crazy people in the hallways and all this stuff's going on. And she like goes to the desk and like, finds the key.
There should have been a visor above the desk.
That exactly down. Right.
Oh, it's filed under D for Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, it's just like, and even then, I mean, quite honestly, if I'm being very, 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 very honest, it wasn't as egregious as I'm making it out to be. But I was like, of course she fucking finds the keys in a dark room that's completely fucked up. Like, of course she does. Why would she not? Like, God damn it. But I mean, it's like I said, it was pretty brief, and it wasn't the most egregious that I've ever experienced of that kind of thing, and, you know, whatever. But it still kind of struck me as being like, oh, for Pete's sakes.
It's the insane asylum of Visor Keys. I think that Scully nailed it. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, such as it is, like, you know, I said, it didn't get checked out necessarily. It was just sort of like, okay, well, fine.
Yeah, I think, my bitch is not with the story. It's just with the characterization of our protagonist. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think it maybe reads better than it watched for me. Like, I would, just because I've been reading way too many comic books lately, that's how my brain's working now. I would love to see this as, like, a 5-issue Garth Ennis miniseries. Like, you know, it would be crazy, gory, and hilarious, and fun. And, like, I'd like to see that. But it would also be better written for, like, who we're watching, you know? And honestly, it would also, I think, take it out of the first-person perspective, which it might benefit from, because it would widen up that world a little bit, which I totally get with the budgeting, but...
Oh, that reminds me, Matt, if you have any access to a library up there, and they have any graphic novels of any kind, or if you can track them down, you have got to read basically anything that Joelle Jones has ever touched. She is she's an art illustrator and writer, and she did Lady Killer, which I fucking love. And she's done some other spot writing and other illustrating and a bunch of other things, but the things that she writes and does illustrations for, like, I fucking love that woman. She's so talented and so sharp, and, like, gosh, she's so great.
Text me the name to make sure I get it right.
Yeah, she is she's something else.
Also, the ending of this is just so goddamn satisfying. It reminded me of the ending of the Siren section in VHS. I had the
same thought. Yep.
I also loved. But then just getting it a step further with, yes, she sprouts her wings and she goes to fly, but then, like, oh, there's just a fucking hellmouth over Jerusalem and all of the zombie demon things are taken off and the helicopters just get taken down. Like, oh, that's a big, like... action set piece.
Yeah, it's like a cataclysmic world-ending event, which is pretty cool.
It's like the similar feel as the giant hand coming out of the ground at the end of Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh.
And that shot when the camera goes up there and you're like, oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand how fucked I was.
I was expecting, actually... when we started the movie and they started talking about atoning for sins and hinting about her brother, I went and wrote down on a piece of paper, she's going to have to confess that she killed her brother.
Oh.
And it's like, and like sealed it, like just to make sure, you know, if this happens that I called it. But then that really doesn't come into play. It isn't that, like, as above, so below, where we have to confront our sins and move on. It's just like, no, shit's fucked.
Yeah, I also felt like she was a little ham-fisted in her grief over her brother, and it was, because I was like, I couldn't gauge, I think they eventually say it was like a year before.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. About a year.
Because at first it was like, I don't know why I'm going to go say goodbye to him. And I was like, so was this like Tuesday? That seems weird that you're leaving, and then all of a sudden... And it's like, oh, it's been a year. Like, I don't know. And I've not lost someone that directly close to me yet, so I don't get to talk, I guess. But, like, it felt like it was a little all over the place with how important that was versus what she was doing in life.
Variable degree of grief.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, the grief grenade.
Although, Joshua, it did make me, when the guy that she's with puts on the glasses and sees the pictures of her and her brother, and he, like, makes a couple cracks.
He's the douche in the hat.
Yeah, it's like, well, I did affect very, very affectionately, and I say this with all the sincerity and respect in the world, but, like, Josh at times in his life has definitely suffered, as many of us have, but Josh definitely has suffered from foot and mouth disease a couple times. You know, to his great chagrin, because he's someone of great character and earnestness, but definitely can have that happen to him, as it can happen to many people. And then when that happened, I'm like, it's like, oh, that's like a Josh at 22 type of a thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely saw myself in that. I have fully like, done the whole, like, weird, look at this, like, piece of shit, and it's like, that's my mom. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Fuck, man.
There was a weird, like... couple of months, almost like a 6-month period maybe, where that happened to me 3 or 4 times. Oof. Where it was the, like, standing right behind me moment, Like we had gone to.
That's what I was thinking of.
I literally just blushed from my standing behind me right now moment.
Well, the one Charlie's thinking about is we had been to this house party.
Oh yeah.
And we were out the next day, and they're like, "That was an interesting party. Like that house was really amazing." And I was like, "Yeah, but you know what? It felt really impersonal. Like this person had all this fancy shit, but like." I didn't get a sense of who they were. It just seemed like kind of almost like a movie set. Like it felt very empty. And like the new person in our group, everyone like stops, looks at me, looks at him. I was like, "That was your house." "Well, it was a very nice house." But fuck, whatever, man. I said it. Sorry. Just kind of walked off because what are you going to do?
Yeah, there's nothing you can really do but just be like, either double down and try to make it funnier by just leaning into it, or just go, "Sorry." Like, there's really no...
It was kind of halfway. I was like, "That was a nice boulder, you know?"
Yeah, like, oops.
Yeah. I didn't mean you were a soulless douche, just whoever might have owned that house seemed like one.
Not you, the person's name who's on the lease.
Hello? Yeah, the one that is currently... Let me see. 22 years later just made me blush when you said like foot and mouth moments that I recalled from high school. I was ranting about a particular teacher. I'm blushing again now that I'm talking about it. To like my table full of friends in the lunchroom because something had happened that morning, and I'm just going off in rare form, you know, a la my trademark rants, and no one's laughing at after a while. And they're all like, either like studiously looking at their plate or looking at me. And I literally did say, "She's behind me, isn't she?" And then a hand touched my shoulder. And then she just walked off because she's the classiest person ever. Mm. And just didn't say shit about it, didn't do anything, just knew that like that was enough. And of course, my dad taught at my high school, which meant I had to like go see him to get a ride home at the end of the day, and he's like, "Oh yeah, almost ready, just gotta swing by and talk to so-and-so," which was that teacher.
Oh, of course it was.
So I got to walk with my dad into her classroom, and again, not a word, because she's the classiest motherfucker among us. And oh, it, like I said, haunts me 22 years later, one of the most ingrained lessons of my life.
Always look over your shoulder before you
right, just before you talk shit.
Before you stab, yeah.
Maybe I didn't learn the right lesson, but oh god.
Oh, so for this guy, I would say
flop sweating now.
I'm going to be the highest on this one, I'm sure. I enjoyed the hell out of it. Jess actually liked it too. So that was interesting. We watched it because she is into religious horror, and which just didn't really end up being, but she was into it despite. So I would say for me, this was 7.5 out of 10. You seriously fucking followed the guy dressed all in black who was like, "Come here, I have to find your friend." You are so fucking lucky that that was your friend playing a prank on you, God. And not just a murdered dude. Like, our protagonist is an idiot in this. But yes, 7.5 out of 10s.
Yeah, I'm going to be maybe a little higher than it might sound like I would, and just go right in the middle of... just give it a 5, because I think there are good ideas here. It's just like... a single point that like once it, you know, the earworm dug in, I couldn't let go of how annoyed I was with the protagonist. Even though whenever she wasn't doing something specifically to annoy me, I was enjoying watching what was happening around her. So like a slightly different version of this exact movie would be like right up my alley. So I dig what they were going for. I just wish they'd found a better way to present it.
I think that seems reasonable. Yeah, I was actually going to be a little lower, and I've kind of been frosted into a slightly higher number than I would have normally. Because, yeah, I know, right? On a Thursday, yeah, I mean, it's like I think it has some qualities, you know, to it. I there's enough intrigue and interest in kind of the bigger world aspects of it that were kind of good. I get a little nauseous a couple of times with the threshing and the threshing around and all that kind of jazz. Yeah, that was interesting enough. So, yeah, like I said, I'll go a little bit higher than I normally would, what I would have actually. So I'd say 6 out of 10, 6 out of 10, You follow the schedule. You stay to the schedule. You do not deviate from the schedule or location previously determined, says the voice in my head.
Should we follow the sketchy European guy to Tel Aviv, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? Yes.
Plan the dive. Dive the plan.
Let's rearrange our entire thing, because there is apparently is time for love, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, there's a level of comfort that some people must have with their sense of not exactly wealth, but at least financial stability, that you could plan a trip and decide to say fuck it and change that and not just be ruined. Mm-hmm. I do not live in that particular rarefied air.
The other thing that this movie made me think of was let's see, 2015 or 2016 or one of those that are years. There was the 1 year that it must have been 2015. I think I'm not 100% sure, but anyway, the 1 year that Fantastic Fest was up at the far away Alamo location, while the one closer to downtown was being renovated, the whole shopping center was, and so they moved it way up north, which was fine, and it turned out okay. You know, it was no big deal except for the traffic and stuff. But anyway, I remember one of the things that I remember from that year was that there was a dude that I think worked for one of the tech companies, or was some kind of, maybe it was like part of a financing team for some of the movies or distribute something. I don't know. Somebody that had some money, like not really a movie person so much, but on the movie side or tech side or whatever. He had a pair of those Google Glass things, and he was walking around like both the opening night and the closing night party wearing them. And he just looked like the most miserable motherfucker you ever seen in your life. Like and I will never forget that. Ever. Like, I'm not embellishing, I'm not editorializing, he just looked super unhappy. And it was just sort of like, it's like, what is that thing doing to his head? I wonder to this day. But I will never forget that. He just like didn't look like he was in pain, didn't look angry. He just sort of looked unhappy. Like, it was real weird. So always for everything, so when this thing with Google Glass, like, oh, there's that unhappy guy at the Fantastic Fest party wearing one of those. It's like, I can't remember people's names half the time, but that's that I remember.
I saw something similar a couple of years ago when the Snapchat glasses came out.
Snapchat glasses?
Yeah, I wasn't even aware of that.
Round lensed, like sunglass looking things that had a camera that could take video and images in like this weird circular format. So it could be rotated either vertically or horizontally. But it was
crazy.
They sold them in vending machines only in this, like,
what?
This rollout that they were in a, like, we're going to make it so all the influencers are going to want to have these to post stuff on Snapchat. And that was all they do, is take pictures to post on Snapchat. So they could do it at one of the content marketing conferences, had a pair on. And it was just this, like, I guess I should be taking a bunch of pictures and posting them, but I guess I'll just answer the same question about my glasses that I have. That was fun the first two times, but now it's like, yes, they're the Snapchat glasses. No, they're fine.
These are the same people that came up with that one. I'm relatively sure were the ones in the marketing department for Microsoft when they came out with the Zune. I don't know if anybody ever remembers this, but came up with the term of squirting songs from one Zune to another.
Wait, really?
Oh, yes. That was the term that they went with initially. And there was advertisements in Rolling Stone. I probably have a couple in my box upstairs. Sorry. Some of the issues from that era that I kept. I didn't keep all of them, because, you know, they're not that crazy, but like I kept a few. And like, there's advertisements for the Zune. They talk about squirting songs. And it's like, same geniuses that came up with that fucking thing for the first 6 months before they're like, we got to stop that. But the ones that came up with the Snapchat glasses. Good lord. Oh, golly. You want to know what's under my kilt? The Snapchat glasses.
Yeah.
I don't know where you've been, but I see you've won first prize and are now an influencer.
I guess. Wait. And if you work in marketing, maybe you need to spend a little less time writing bad slogans and a little more time watching those short documentary videos I watch sometimes on the internet.
Exactly.
And are Jewish, I guess. That's it. We'll call back to Stalag 17. Yeah, exactly. Good, Joshua. It's little things, good. You know?
If you went to high school with either of us,
yeah, that was real fucking funny.
Gotta get those Andy Kaufman 11% jokes in.
Oh, golly. Yeah.
We'll be right back with the Beach House.
Yes.
Beach House. So finally, we have the beach house, or La Casa en la Playa. And as always, I am reminded that I am blessed in my life to have been able to make the same joke twice to two different people when I had just watched the movie Beaches. And people, separate people on separate occasion asked me, have you seen Beaches? And I said, yeah, but I like the sequel better. And both of them said, oh my God, there's a sequel? And I got to say, yeah, it's about their kids. It's called Sons of Beaches. Twice.
Excellent.
How rich our lives are.
Fantastic. But,
this is about a worthless dude and his improbably smart and hot girlfriend who go to their dad's beach house. His dad's beach house. Their dad's, that would be weird. To spend the weekend. They find dad's friends are there. And then they find out that basically because of global warming that microbes are rising up from the bottom of the ocean and pretty much turning everyone into fish snot, and it gets gross and it gets tense and it gets bleak, and it's a quick ass ride too, like, so this is,
yeah, for me, this is just like a
agreeably gross, like, cool roller coaster that was only slightly marred by I'm so sick of that guy in movies. He's like, hi, I'm like marginally attractive. I have a stupid haircut and nothing going for me at all. And I'm kind of a dick to this girl and like a little abrasive, a little too violent. And she's totally into me for no fucking reason. Like, we gotta stop having that guy so that women can see that they don't have to have that guy.
It is what happens if I were to Mary Sue myself into a script. Like, you know, the guy that's like, education's a scam, man. Like, let's just chill forever. Like, there's parts of that where I'm like, fuck, I totally identify with this guy. What a dick. And I had to do some introspection.
But where he's like, come on, babe, you're totally going to drop out of grad school.
Oh, my God. You're not smart enough. Infuriating conversation.
What the fuck is this man?
No, the thing like about this, though, is that, like, as you said, this is like a quick little thing, but somehow manages to be remarkably patient. Because it really just lets you sit with these people for a while. Like, well, long enough to kind of hate Duder. And then, mm-hmm. like, you have that, like, brief moment of tension, like, there's someone in the fucking house, you know? And that actually kind of works as its own little red herring. But then, you know, that particular awkwardness gets diffused, and then you have, like, what for me is still, like, incredibly tense, because it's like, oh, we're going to have a random unplanned dinner with these people, and I'm like, oh, fuck me, I would nope my way out of that and go back home so fast. Like, my anxiety can't handle that shit. But that's all good. It's fine. And then it's like, hey, I know dinner was good and you liked these oysters, but have you ever had oysters on weed? And then it's like anxiety goes way back up again. And that's still not the point of the movie. Like, that's not what they're going for, you know? But I'm instantly going, okay, I'm worried about, I can't remember her name now, the older woman. Because, like, something's clearly up, and it's like, oh, let's just dump a bunch of marijuana on her. And I'm like, oh, no, this is not going to end well for lovely, kind old, like, woman.
She's on a ton of medication. Maybe.
Yeah, like, read the room, dude. Like, or at least read the medicine cabinet.
It was interesting. One of her medications was one that I have had a couple of times.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, on Dancitron?
Yeah.
For nausea, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, is she having chemo, or is she having, like, bad vertigo, or what?
I like that they don't even address it.
Yeah.
I don't think. She's just on a bunch of shit, and, like, something's not good, like, and then it's like, oh, whatever. But there's just kind of like, yeah, there's just a nebulous issue, and that gets them all the way to the point of, like, yeah, let's dope them up and hope it's okay. But it kind of takes a while to get to glowy beach at night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's then,
like, oh, yeah, that was a trip.
Oh, that's fucked.
It's really right. pretty. It very much is that like color out of space kind of thing where I was like, ooh, pretty. Mm-hmm. And then after that just decides like, what if instead now everything is gross for like 20 minutes?
It really is color out of the beach, pretty much.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Charlie?
I was going to say, well, color out of space is a very good parallel, but I do like, because this fella, from what I can understand, I don't know much about him. The guy who wrote and directed this, I think he's done a lot of work in film, but I don't know that he's directed before. Like this is like his first feature. I could be wrong with that, but I think this is his first feature.
He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, so it's got to be pretty early.
So I think he's done production and done work on a lot of other films, but like or other you know whatever. But like he hasn't wrote or directed anything, and so I appreciate that the scale is not. Doesn't get unwieldy in terms of like, you know, because color out of space gets a little, you know, big's maybe not the right word, but like it gets, you know, expands itself a little bit where I think with this one, it's like it keeps it smaller, like almost to not in the same caliber, but like in the same scope as like Honeymoon, where like we just keep it kind of smaller. The other thing with this one too is that I didn't know what the fuck this was about. When I saw this was Chattanooga, this was part of Chattanooga. So all it's like poster, and then like two people go to this beach house, and I was like, okay, like I got time, and so I watched it like in the morning or something like that, and then it's like, along everything else for Chattanooga, but it was like, so I didn't know anything about this, I didn't know nothing. So when they get there and those people are there, I was like, is this gonna be like a murdery thing, like?
I was expecting like a strangers type of thing. Yeah,
yeah, like some kind of visit. Murdery.
Oh yeah, yeah,
something where it's like there's some murdery something going on here, and it's like oh no, we're not that's not what we're doing at all. And it just so that was kind of refreshing in that sense, probably just because of expectation. Like I was like, okay, I'm not expecting crazy Lovecraftian snot monsters from the deep. You know, it's sort of like this is a very different kind of a deal. And so I really appreciate that from a scope standpoint, because I think if you had a group of friends or you had relationships with like three of the neighbors that also had, you know, beach houses there or whatever, I think it starts to get too unwieldy from that in that way, you know. So on the one side, like the writing and the characters, especially the dude character, it's like it's just a little flat and a little bit meh. On the plus side, it doesn't, if that is a weak spot, then it doesn't like become a weak spot for like five more speaking characters that we're supposed to care about, you know. So like in a way it's good that the scale stays as it does. But actually I want to go real quickly back to that that dinner sequence and like how just like annoying the guy is, and that whole like clearly this girl has, you know, she is put more work and time in, and she is more serious-minded in general, and you're kind of seeing the scope of the two people, and then it plays out later, like, as kind of as you would expect, I guess, where she says to her best to try to save herself as best as she can. but in that scene, in that whole sequence, in that whole deal, it was like, what I found most interesting was, in a way, Jake Weber, the guy who plays the family friend, you would expect him to kind of like almost, you know, like stand in and like, you know, like not violently, but like, you know, vigorously defend her honor or whatever, or like some kind of a weird, like dick swinging situation with the guy. And it's like, it never really goes to that thing. And true. I was expecting it. I was surprised that it didn't. And then it got me thinking about why it didn't. And I was like, I was wondering like what the writing motivation was to like not have that be the scene that you expect, to have it be this tense, like shouting match, like, oh, fuck it, I'm gonna go walk on the beach. And then like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I just kind of whatever. It just kind of was like socially uncomfortable, and then just didn't go down that road, and like it just kind of stuck with me a little bit, like why it doesn't go that route exactly. And you know, is it because maybe like he hasn't written like a ton of scripts or hasn't a bunch of scripts produced, or is it just because like that isn't, when it's all said and done, that interesting? And it's like, and so I think given how brisk the thing is in terms of getting from point A to point B, like maybe he just And he's like, "Yeah, I ain't got time for that. And it's not really interesting, and so we're not gonna vote. I do not acknowledge that exists, so I'm not gonna." Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, honestly, that guy, the older man, is one of the more interesting characters to me, because he doesn't get in the dick measuring contest, and he also is not expressing sexual interest in the girl, which is great.
Thank you. He's
not like trying to awkwardly get down with the kids kind of thing. He is just a guy.
And yeah, he's like, just like every other old guy you've ever met in real life.
Yeah, and that just is really refreshing as I become someone who identifies more closely with that dude than with the dippy 20-year-olds.
Same.
In the beginning of this, so that's good to see.
Well, and Joshua, you touched on the main thing too with that also with him, was that like, as far as like the medications the wife is under, what the situation with that is, like, is his sort of willingness like, "Oh, we'll have a little bit of edibles and hey, we'll just hang out and oh, isn't that cool," and whatever. Like, it doesn't feel like it's like, you know, Steve Buscemi, like, "Oh, hello, fellow kids." It's not that. It's more like there's clearly something sad going on in it, with all this stuff, and you're just like, okay. You know, he's just, for lack of, the only way I could think to say this would be like, you know, lightening the mood, I guess, is the only way I could think of it. And hats off to them for not going down some 10-minute biographical thing about that, or like going on into whatever, or like, as Josh, as you say, like having him be like getting down with the kids and whatever, or most importantly, like not trying to scheme on the girl, which is the other thing that we would have expected in this scenario. And they just don't, that's not part of the story. Yeah,
this like, avoids some obvious lazy writing pitfalls for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, 100%. And so like, that's why I do give it a lot of credit, is that like, even though the dude character, Josh, as you say, it rightfully so, that it's just like, oh, for crying out loud. But on the other side of the coin, like, there are these simpleton set of pitfalls that are, that they kind of avoid. On the other side of the coin, though, like, I was a little bit underwhelmed by, like, Jake Weber's character sort of demise. It was kind of like, he's like, I'm going to go for a swim. And then, like, just walks off into the ocean.
Because his demise is unique.
Yeah, it doesn't really jive with, like, the neighbor guy that we see crawling has the same kind of situation as, like,
Lady. Because everybody else seems to get the Innsmouth look about them.
Yeah.
Walk to feast on flesh.
And he just kind of, like, walks off into the ocean. And I was like, what?
Which, so, to be fair, I kind weird. Of like. I have like a romantic attachment to that weird ending.
But like, that he was super infected. I think he knew that his wife was done, and I think he commits suicide. Like the way that he's walking, it almost seems like his pockets are weighed down.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And I loved that just still shot, they hold
fucking as he just endless.
walks until we can barely see his head, and then his head disappears.
Yeah,
and that, then I, well, yeah, think about it from her perspective, like, how freaky is that? Like, good.
Well, it's one long ass shot. I think they cut right at the end and then cut back, but it's chilling because I sat there going, oh, no way. Are they really just going to make this poor asshole walk all the way out? Yeah, they are. Awesome. Good choice. Like, it's really, like, fuck, that had to suck. But it looks so compelling. Like, it's one of those things that once you see the result, you go, yeah, that was worth doing.
And I really do think, though, that he was committing suicide. That it wasn't that he swam out or he walked out and the monsters got him. I thought he was just done.
I like that much better. Yeah. So I'm going to say that. Yes, that's it.
Yeah. I think that's perfectly reasonable. I mean, I think that's perfectly reasonable, but it was just a little bit arresting. It was a little bit arresting just in the context of what else was going on. It was kind of like, God, that was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you say, huh. You said I was like not mad at it per se, but it was just kind of struck me funny.
Yeah. I think
it definitely is interesting that it did, that they introduced that character and spend so much time with him and then throw him away.
Yeah, I think if you add the pathos of, like, he saw that, like, they'd had this, like, having this rough go of it, and he sees that his wife is over as a human, and just goes, nope, this is, like, a bridge too far. I can't. Like, that I think, is... That gives it the emotional weight that justifies it and makes it actually, like, cool. Whereas if it's... I brought her out here because of her cancer or whatever the fuck, and now I can die. Like, that's shitty then. Or if it's just, I've got the boogaloos from the what in the hay now that's in the spores, then that's also just kind of bad writing. But I think if you give it that kind of much more deft touch, it's pretty cool.
It's just kind of haunting and sad.
Yeah.
And then you juxtapose it with the, like, stepping on the thing and having the worm kind of coiled up in her heel.
Oh, God.
And fuck me in the neck. That's gross.
But then cut with the long shot at the top of the staircase. We're just waiting for her to drag her ass up those stairs. And then right after that, the scene from Honeymoon, only in the bottom of a foot, and it somehow works.
So fucking gross,
like,
dude.
Well, because you can feel it, right? I mean, you watch a scene like that, you feel it. Like, we were, I don't know what the hell we were watching the other day.
Yeah, my toes something. Curl. Yeah.
We were watching something the other day, Connor and I were watching something, and, like, there was some, like, just jump, I wish I could remember what it was, but I felt it, like, the back of my thigh, or it was just sort of like, I felt like this tingle up the back of my thigh. Yeah, good lord. Oh, no, that's what it was. Shit, it was the thing with the, where, no, Jesus, this, it was fucking Metamorphosis, where she steps on the glass.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it just, like, goes through her foot. It's like, I felt that up the back of my thigh. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah,
because it's just, it's that, like, nope, too real, too common, too gross.
Well, I mean, she's doing the scene in this one. She's doing that scene with, I mean, she's doing it with, like a pair of kitchen tongs. And, like, a kitchen knife.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, you have those objects around. Like, these are not...
You know, and you know how big and clunky they would be for what she's trying to do.
Oh, yeah.
And yet you also... And then to me, I was sitting there going, as you're pulling this out, you've got to be thinking, how far up my leg was this? Like, you know, like, because you're like, oh, there's a thing moving. Oh. And you realize, oh, this thing was probably, like, from my foot that I could see all the way up past my knee. And that, to me, is a whole other level of horror. Like, just, nope. Just honey bunches of nope.
Another thing I got to give him a lot of credit for, just real quickly, was towards the latter part of things, as things are just getting really, really jacked up, and they go to the other house, they get the light from the TV, where there's got the emergency broadcasting thing, but, like, the scene in the kitchen where she's, like, trying to get the water for him, and just the glop comes out of the sink, you know, that was just lit with, like low light from a porch light or whatever else. It wasn't like big filters or big style or big whatever. Like, it was just, it was more naturally lit.
Oh yeah. It's, it could be, like, just like two of those garage effective. Lights that are arc sodiums that you just toss in a corner.
Yeah. It's just like, and I know it's a little thing, but it's just like, it gives it some more kind of not gravitas, but like more depth or more impact. Because I'm not distracted by stylistic choices. Like, I'm seeing in this low light her turning the sink off, looking at the sink, and then seeing this glop come out and being like, shit, man. Like, it's just, but I'm not distracted by the style choices of the movie. I'm more just focused on this perilous, awful situation that she's in. And it's like, and God bless them for just sticking with what the story that they're telling and not the, you know, it's not about the garnish, it's about the food. You know, and which, I mean, maybe it's just my age. I don't know. I'm starting to get that way with some of the stuff. I'm like, I don't want to see your style choices. I just want to see the movie. That's all I want.
And this was refreshingly straightforward.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's like Hush, almost. Like, there's just this tiny little micro genre of horror that's just, we are going to strip a familiar kind of story to tell down to the bare bones, and we are going to do it in the most straightforward fashion, and it's just going to be a roller coaster from start to finish. We're not going to talk and stop and chat about our feelings. We're just going to do this thing. And it's not going to matter, like, the issues Duder has with his father or any of that shit. Like, it's just straight up, you know, the almost zombie, but, you know, slimy.
It's that, like,
squid like, zombies, I think is what Jess called them.
Yeah, that horror by way of stylistically documentary, you know, just which is, of course, a false comparison because documentary is stylized as fuck. But, like, the idea that what you're watching is
awful and whatever, but they try to make it look like all they did was set the camera on a tripod and hit record. Mm. And that really behooves, especially like a pretty straightforward story like this one. And
well, and the gold standard is always Hollywood, Honeymoon. Like, yeah. That is like the pinnacle of how you tell us an impactful story, tiny. And I don't think this is of that quality, but I think this dude's instincts are to go to the right scale, and like that really made me that made me happy. You know, I think too many people get a little bit too big for their britches in terms of style stuff. I think you just get back down to it. You can make more out of a thing. So I really applaud this fellow for that. I was like, nothing ever gets to Honeymoon level. It's just like, that is the one where it's just like, just clenched butthole, like gripped couch. It's just
I think because I liked both of those characters.
Yeah, Honeymoon. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
And there's the only thing that's missing here. Like, I hated both of them for a bit until the girl started talking about her career, and it was like, oh, she's actually smart and she knows stuff, and her knowledge is relevant to what we're seeing in this movie. Like, oh, she is serving a purpose in this movie. This dude is just garbage for no reason. Like, how much better would this have been if we had really wanted her to save him throughout?
Instead of just dragging this load with you, you know? Yeah, because if we really cared about her succeeding and saving him, like that really changes that dynamic a ton.
Because she's just literally doing what she's metaphorically probably been doing for 4 years.
Yeah. That, you're right, Joshua. That would really change the dynamic to where you're like, come on, girl, you got to come up with something. We got to save you know, Jeff, who volunteers at the children's hospital and donated five kidneys. I don't know how he did five kidneys, but he did it. Somehow he did it. Only
two of them are his.
He's quantum quintuplets.
that really would change the dynamic a great deal. Or if instead of being just a useless kind of saddlebag, you know, like there's a scene with him and Dad's friend where he's just like, I've got to get my shit together. Like, I've been so frustrated with this part of it, and like, you know, like not just for her sake, but for my own. Like, just there's none of that.
Even if he just showed some insecurity. Yeah. You know, if he's talking to Dad's friend and it's just like, you know, Dad's friend's like, wow, there's quite a girl you got there. He's like, yeah. Honestly, though, like, she's going this place and like, I'm not there and I'm afraid she's going to leave me. Like, that would also be interesting because that would make perfect sense in that scenario. But they just kind of roll along, you know, the merrily way, and it just kind of.
And as it is, she keeps going, I can't leave him. I can't leave him. I love him. And we're like, fucking why?
Yeah. I mean, the heart wants what it wants, but the heart also doesn't want to stop beating.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is that.
There's so much about this that I like. I had kind of hoped for more, like, creature rising from the sea. Like, whenever I hear Lovecraftian, I'm looking for, like, a nice Cthulhu-esque thing happening, or people turning into fish people and kind of trying to keep that on the down low, you know, whatever. And this ends up being more of a, like, the people who have gotten infected are more zombie-ish than anything.
Which is fine.
Like, that is the least compelling part of it. But then you have, like, the gross stuff coming out of the faucets and out of people's bodies, and, like, the dude who's made entirely of slime towards the end, and yeah, it just keeps going. This was one of our bleakest weeks, I think, as far as endings go.
Yeah.
Everyone's fucked at the end of both of those, of Jerusalem and Beach House, and then Metamorphosis, they're down at least a man or two by the end of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. All told, like, this was probably, it's a really close to Jerusalem. I think I like this one just a little bit better, because it just, for how lean it was. So for me, like, this is easily I would say 7.5 out of 10. The early ankle gets the worms.
Hey, oh. Joshua.
Upsetting.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I think this is definitely, is it, like I kind of said earlier, it is somehow like quick and dirty while patient, and that's weird, but it's a movie that I think in the first little hunk, I was getting worried that I would start tuning it out, but before I did, it kind of caught me. And so, you know, your mileage may vary, but I was impressed with its ability to really not seem to be too concerned of whether or not it was doing anything exciting at first. And yet, like, in retrospect, I don't feel like it was slow. It was, like, patient, you know? And then once things get a little uncomfortable for me, which is as soon as they realize there's someone else in the house, which isn't that deep into the movie, I had a couple of, you know, cat scare reasons to be anxious, and then just the movie full on just kind of starts to unravel even when we don't quite understand what's happening. You know, if I show up on a beach full of gooey jellyfish leftovers and, you know, worst case scenario, step on one and see something move in my foot, I'm pretty sure I just asked to have my leg amputated like this. Right. You know, so like at that point, this movie has me by the throat. And it does a pretty good job, I think, of just holding me there. I do think our full-on, you know, like melted candle goo fish monster in the basement and in the other house is fine. It's maybe a little underwhelming as like a final form Pokemon, but it's fine. You know, it's not bad. It's just like, oh, okay. So like, eventually, you just get even gooier. Whatever, but. I think it's honestly enough to be just creeped out by people kind of just losing their humanity and dragging themselves along after you. And it's like, I don't know what they want. Do they want to eat me? Do they want to infect me? Are they just trying to get to the ocean like a sea turtle? Like, that was a little nebulous to me at first. And I think that was a fine place to live. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff happening. A really compelling, you know, earlier first effort, whatever it might be from this particular writer, director, whatever. So, yeah, good times, definitely worth a watch. So I'll say, I think it's fair to probably go, yeah, I'll go 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10, I guess I have to stop being too cool for bottled water.
Yeah, this is the type of thing that, like, if you're, you know, if you're prone to those type of things, you start thinking, like, what do I put in my body on a day-to-day basis? Like,
if you're any kind of germaphobe, this is just a nightmare fuel movie.
Yeah, it's just like, oh my god.
Or if you're someone who's like, man, I wonder what kind of viruses are lurking under the permafrost that we're about to lose permanently.
That's the thing, you know, I think, like, about, yeah.
Between this and Blood Glacier.
Yum. Which, like, oh, look, I mean, we, like, found a mammoth, and it's like, oh, look, that might be our death.
Which, I mean, you know, like, you know, it's like not a conspiracy theory rabbit hole thing, crazy like that, but I always think about, like, because I watch it, I don't know what the problem is. Like, I watch just so many goddamn nature shows in my lifetime. Like, I don't know what it is exactly. Like, I've never had the discipline to go into the biological sciences, but, like, I've always been so interested in that kind of stuff, and it's like, you watch a thing about, you know, different kinds of venomous creatures. And then you read a thing about, like, that one, like, hornet thing that can sting a thing, and then it becomes, like, a zombie, sort of, and then, like, it can kind of control it back to where it wants to go. And you think, if anybody in the wasp party and anybody in the venomous snake party ever got together and worked out a plan, like, we'd be fucked. Like,
well, their caucuses always fail because the snake half can't raise a hand.
That's true. It's like, okay, we're going to vote by snapping. Like, fuck you. But that's the kind of thing I think of when I watch something like this. It's just sort of like this, that melding of stuff in a biological way where, like, you know, science, I always say, like, the thing I always say, which is like, it's like science doesn't care. Earth doesn't, you know, nature doesn't care.
Yeah, if you want to make sure that you never sleep comfortably again, just read Parasite Rex. It's amazing.
Oh, fuck yeah. I only just know of it by reputation.
Oh, God, it's so good, like, dude.
Oh, God, you know, it's just like, so when you watch something like this, it kind of gets your, it kind of gets those juices going a little bit. And I kind of like that. Like I said, I really like that they don't go punching way above their weight class in terms of, like, a bigger scale thing. I think keeping it smaller was smart to do, and I think this fella showed some really strong instincts in terms of what to leave out and what to focus on. So I mean, I really, you know, hats off to him for that. I think for what it is, it really does a good job. Just definitely some squeaky stuff. So I would say, let's go 7. Let's go 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. It's nature, man.
Exactly. Well, all right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with our films for next week. So next week we are going to do one rental and a couple that are on some streaming services we already subscribed to. So we're going to watch The Relic for our video on demand, not the 90s monster movie, but the new one starring Emily Mortimer that came out this year. And then we're going to watch Cured on Hulu, The Cured. And Lake of Death is new to Shudder, so we're going to watch that. And our short is called Blight. So Cured, The Relic, Lake of Death, and Blight. And watch along with us. And I will remind you once again that I've been Josh this entire time. And please wear a mask and don't argue with fuckheads on the internet, because you're worth more and your time is worth more than that.
What he said. Because, that covers it. So as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn and Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other as best you can. And we'll keep doing this as long as you keep listening, and vice versa, I think. One last thing. When we did a short last week, Mala Kostraga, the director reached out to me.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, as he always is, in terms of like every interaction or what I see from him, just good natured and kind of got a good laugh out of everything else. And he was super good natured about it. And the reason why I bring this up, I'm reminded of so many instances that many people that I know over the years have had where they have had directors or writers or people like just go after them for just endless amounts of time about a review or about a this or about a that or whatever else.
Rookie mistake. Like, yeah.
Which, I mean, like, for one thing, like, you will get nothing out of it for starters. And then for another thing, like, you know, these are people too. And it's one of those things where, like, you know, like is short or hate is short or whatever. Like, you know, the fellow that directed it, he had a good perspective on it, which is that, like, once you release it into the wild, like, you can't, you know, I mean, the monkeys don't get sent into the jungle if you just go check on them every 5 hours. Like, it doesn't really work that way. So, like, you know, in a way, you don't lose control per se, but you just, you know, once you've let it out into the world, that's what you got, you know?
Yeah, you can't unfuck that sheep.
Yeah. but anyway, I just wanted to mention that I thought it was a nice reminder that, like, you know, like my friend Trace Thurman, who writes for Bloody Disgusting, like, he had a thing with this one director for like a year where this guy just would not let it drop like this. And honestly, his Trace's review was like not, I don't think it was like inflammatory or terrible, but it was just like, it's just this endless stuff. Anyways, like, it's just, so I thought it was, for one thing, I thought it was really cool that he reached out, for one thing. And then for two, that on a certain level, you're just a person, just like weird people and anything else like that. And so in terms of interactions with, you know, famous people, non-famous people, people do movies, people don't do movies, whatever. Like, the bottom line here is it's just people. And the fellow that directed Mala Kostraga provided a great reminder that, like, you can just be decent no matter what the situation is. And, like, you know, could he have been shitty? Sure. But, you know, that wasn't in the cards. And it was a nice reminder that people can just be profoundly decent and be thick-skinned in not a John Wayne way, but, like, a human way. And so I thought that was great.
So, no, that's super rad. I think that's really cool.
It was, It was awesome. I was like, when I saw that message come in, I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh gosh, this is nice for a person to be super profoundly decent. But what can you expect from a decent sort of a dude? So
it is alarming nice for me to think of someone caring a lot about what we think. I mean, if listening to us brings you joy, great. But to think that in any way we matter is also foreign to me.
So, but anyway, I thought I'd share that because I thought it was a lovely. A lovely little thing that happened. It's just a nice reminder that just to be humane and to be decent and to be grounded is not that hard to do, whether you're in a creative world or in the medical world or any other world for that matter. So anyway, it's a nice reminder. Take care of yourselves and we'll talk at you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.